we've come to Ezra chapter 2. I think we said a few things about the chapter last week, but I think it would be good to just read some verses from it so that we give it proper attention. Obviously, it's a genealogy. Well, it's not a genealogy, sorry. It's a list of names like a genealogy. And that may be a little difficult to read through together in the limited time we have available to us. But I think it would be good to pick out some verses from it, not to preclude anyone drawing a lesson or making a comment about a verse that we don't read, but just simply to give us a flavour of what the chapter says, because as well as that list of names, there is a matter that we did mention last week about those who moved to the land as if they were priests and yet could not be proved to be priests. And perhaps we can say a little bit more about that. But then I suggest we move on a little to chapter 3 and read the first three verses of that. So I begin to read at Ezra chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Now, these are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity of those which had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away unto Babylon, and came again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one unto his city, which came with Zerubbabel, Jeshua, Nehemiah, Sariah, Reeliah, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mizpah, Bigvai, Rehum, Baana. The number of the men of the people of Israel. And then we get a colon, and that takes us on to the children of Parosh, 2,172. That list continues on down to verse 35. But then at verse 36, we get the priests, the children of Jediah of the house of Jeshua, 973. And we get further mention of those priestly families down to verse 30, down to verse 39. Then in verse 40, we get the Levites, those who helped the priests, the children of Jeshua and Kadmiel, of the children of Hodaviah, 74. And then in verse 41, we get a specific mention of the singers, the children of Asaph. We'll all remember that some of the psalms are attributed to the to Asaph, 128. Verse 42, the children of the porters, the children of Shalom, the children of Atta, the children of Talmon, the children of Akab, the children of Hatita, the children of Shobai, in all 139. And then verse 43, the Nethinims, the children of Zihar, the children of Hasufa, the children of Tabaoth. And there's a number of verses which refer to the Nethinims. And then in verse 55, the children of Solomon's servants, the children of Sotai, the children of Sophereth, the children of Peruda, and some others. Although I've mentioned the children of Solomon, in verse 58, it says all of the ones that are mentioned in these verses were Nethinims. But I thought I'd mention the fact that they were the children of Solomon. I'm not sure, Solomon's servants. I assume that refers to the servants of Solomon the king. And it says in verse 59, and these were they which went up from Telmiah, Telmela, Telharesah, Cherub, Adam, and Immer, but they could not show their father's house and their seed, whether they were of Israel. And then in verses 61 to 70, we get the point about those who were priests that I mentioned earlier. and of the children of the priests, the children of Habiah, the children of Koz, the children of Barzillai, which took a wife of the daughters of Barzillai the Gileadite and was called after their name. These sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but they were not found. Therefore were they, as polluted, put from the priesthood. And the Tirshatha, the governor, I assume that's Zerubbabel, said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with Urim and with Thummim. The whole congregation together was 42,303. That's 4,260. Beside their children and their maids, of whom there were 7,337, and there were among them 200 singing men and singing women. Their horses were 736, their mules 245, their camels 435, their asses 6,720. And some of the chief of the fathers, when they came to the house of the Lord, which is at Jerusalem, offered freely for the house of God to set it up in his place. They gave after their ability unto the treasure of the work, 60,000 drams of gold and 5,000 pounds of silver, and 100 priests' garments. So the priests and the Levites and some of the people and the singers and the porters and the Nethinims dwelt in their cities, and all Israel in their cities. Then moving on to chapter 3, the first 7 verses. And when the 7th month was come, the children of Israel were in the cities, the people gathered themselves together as one man to Jerusalem. Then stood up Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, and his brethren, the priests, and Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and his brethren, and builded the altar of the God of Israel, to offer burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar upon his base, for fear was upon them because of the people of those countries. And they offered burnt offerings thereon unto the Lord, even burnt offerings morning and evening. They kept also the Feast of Tabernacles, as it is written, and offered the daily burnt offerings by number, according to the custom, as the duty of every day required, and afterward offered the continual burnt offering, both of the new moons and of all the set feasts of the Lord that were consecrated, and of every one that willingly offered a freewill offering unto the Lord. From the first day of the 7th month began they to offer burnt offerings unto the Lord. But the foundation of the temple of the Lord was not yet laid. They gave money also unto the masons and to the carpenters, and meat and drink and oil unto them of Zidon and to them of Tyre, to bring cedar trees from Lebanon to the Sea of Joppa, according to the grant that they had of Cyrus, king of Persia. Well, as I said, I read those verses to give us a picture. To actually read what is written in this book of Ezra about the people who actually responded to the invitation, if we can call it that, of Cyrus to go up to the temple in Jerusalem, so that we can see the variety of people who responded. They were often very different. They had different kinds of responsibilities previously, before the captivity in Babylon, and these were still activities they could carry out now that the people had returned to the land and were going to serve God there, first by building the altar, as we saw at the beginning of chapter 3, and then soon after that they set their hands to building the rebuilding the temple. I'd be happy to hear thoughts of the brethren about these people, and in particular the things that we read about in the beginning of chapter 3.
When we read the beginning of Ezra, we see a marked difference between chapter 1, which we looked at last week, and chapter 2. Chapter 1 everybody was working according to the will of God to go to Jerusalem and to build the house. But when we get to chapter 2, we get every man unto his city. You know, that verse says, the priests and the Levites and some of the people and the singers and the porters and the Nethinim dwelt in their cities, and all Israel in their cities. There's a marked difference between going up to Jerusalem and dwelling in their cities. And I think the application to us would be, chapter 1, we have the principles given before us in the people. They all were working to one end. God had revealed to Cyrus that he was to order the building of the house. And everyone worked to that end, to what God had said, which would speak to us of Matthew 18. Christ said, I will build my assembly and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. But in chapter 2, we see more the local application, the cities. They're in cities. They're not in on the way up to Jerusalem or in Jerusalem. They dwell in cities, which I suppose speaks to us of the working out of the principles in chapter 1 in the assemblies, in the local assemblies. And I think if we bear that in mind, because we don't see everybody working together in chapter 2, when we come to the Levites, the children of Jeshua and Kadmiel, of the children of Hodaviah, 70 and 4. That's all that came back. The Levites, 74. Now, we don't get any of that in chapter 1. Everybody's working together in chapter 1. I think we're looking more at the body of Christ there and the house of God. But when we come to chapter 2, we're starting to look at the working out of the principles we get in chapter 1 in the local assemblies. I think that's the application we can get from these two chapters in particular, and then we go on to the practical lessons of chapter 3 on. But I think if we understand that the Lord did say, and we quoted Matthew 16, but then the other time he mentioned the assembly was in Matthew 18, which is the local assembly aspect. And I think this is what you get in these two chapters. And I think if we can try and apply it to ourselves in that way, I think we'll have much benefit from the study of this book.
In chapter 1, we learned some features of those who would shortly form this remnant in the land of Israel. We saw how they related to the rest of the people of God that were going to choose to stay in Babylon. And also we saw how they related to the Gentile powers that God had set up and submitted his people to. This remnant, not yet really a remnant, because they were in chapter 1, we see them all together in Babylon. They are seen united, serving together with the rest of the nation. They're happy to receive stuff from them to take back. They're working together. Now in chapter 2, we see them coming back to the land, and we see them, if you like, forming a remnant. The rest of the people are in Babylon still, Persia, and now these ones that went back, they are seen as being separate. We see them return to Jerusalem, the place where God had placed his name, the only place where his worship could be conducted in the way in which he said it should be conducted. And as has been said, we see them going back, everyone to their own cities, to form the nation once more. They weren't individual cities as such, independent cities. They were populating these cities, but they had the central unifying place of Jerusalem, the temple. If we apply this to local assemblies are not independent of other local assemblies. It's the interrelation caused by the fact that Jerusalem is the center of the nation. So they come back. And again, we get a repetition of these principles at the start of chapter 2. They are going back to accomplish the will of God, but as implemented through the Gentile monarch. They are going to go back and form this. And we see that they're not the whole nation. I think Simon has mentioned these different groups. I think we count them. There seem to be 11 different groups that God would draw attention to in this chapter. I wouldn't say people, because the last group are animals, starting with the leaders in verse 2. 11 groups, and in the leaders in verse 2, there are 11 men.
Yes.
So in both of these, there seems to be this, what we might say, imperfect administration. This was not a recovery of all the people of God to the land, but only a fraction. No doubt it looks on to that time when God will complete his revival and will recover all the people of God, of Israel, all 12 tribes to the land in their entirety. But this isn't it. This is marked, this is short of that millennial day where the number 12 will be fully seen. Perfect administration, no. It pictures it, no doubt, but it's far short of it. But there are nevertheless a lot of very important lessons that we can learn from this recovery to the city of Jerusalem of these people of God, and many things that we can apply to ourselves. But again, one of the great dangers of this was that these people might have thought, well, we are the people of God now, and those left behind, they chose not to come. That's it. I think the book of Esther would show us God still had in mind those people. And these people here, no doubt going back, have to remember they weren't the nation. They were a fraction. And I think these two numbers 11 that we see in this chapter would bring that forcibly before us.
I would take it that most of us would think that Ezra was the scribe that wrote the book. And what I think is quite interesting in the light of what has been said in the end of verse 2, and the number of the men of the people of Israel. And in the very last verse of our chapter, and all the Israelites dwelt in their cities. He seems to hear, although we know that it was Judah and Benjamin that went, would have been the ones that went back. But here, Ezra includes Israel. He's always got the whole company before him.
Well, I think it's often been said, hasn't it, that a remnant, obviously, we are influenced by the way the word remnant is used today in other contexts, and it's often seen as just the last piece of some of a piece of carpet, for instance, and therefore not really worth much. It might do as a mat, certainly not as the carpet that it comes from. But of course, God sees the remnant in a completely different way as that. Yes, it's small. It's not the whole. It's marked generally by weakness because it's only a part. But it's got all the characteristics, I think, of the whole. And that's what God sees in it, which gives him pleasure. Of course, what we've been saying about the fact that these people were not to see themselves as the nation, and everybody else left in Babylon or Persia was no longer qualified to be regarded as the people of God. That was completely out of the thought. That was completely inconsistent with the thought of God. And I think at this stage, the thought of these people, they saw themselves in the character of Israel. I think we're going to see that some of their sacrifices reflected that fact, that they were acknowledging the fact of 12 tribes, and they weren't going to ignore the fact that they were a partial, that this was only a partial recovery of the nation at this stage. In Romans, we're told that all Israel shall be saved in the future. God will complete, will bring about a complete work. But nevertheless, God takes value in these ones. As to the fact that it was just two tribes, it's true. In terms of actual tribes, it was Judah and Benjamin. And of course, Levites were in every tribe. So no doubt the Levites who have been living amongst the people of Judah and Benjamin are represented in these Levites we read about in chapter 2. But I think it's also true to say that during the course of the divided monarchy, there were times when people from the other tribes, the 10 northern tribes, which had really apostatized, some of them were Some of them came to Jerusalem. In fact, Hezekiah invited people out of every tribe to come to Jerusalem. So it is also true that there were some, a sprinkling among them maybe only, that were from the other 10 tribes. And indeed, when we get to the Lord Jesus being presented in the temple, of course, it's not only Simeon who takes account of his presentation in the temple, but it's the widow, Anna, who was of the tribe of Asher, one of the 10 northern tribes. So I think it's good to remember this aspect of the remnant, that it's there is within it all that God looked for among his and therefore he puts great value on it.
As to the fact that God takes value in them, as you've said, Simon, I think it's significant that only the names of those who returned are recorded.
Yes.
No record of the names of those that remained.
Well, I think we said last week or the week before that Cyrus had made this proclamation, and it was according to the word of Isaiah. And we also saw it was a fulfillment of the prophecy of Jeremiah. And therefore, it was something that really all the people should have, all the people who were able to return should have taken great note of. And it was according to God's will. So I think that is why the names are mentioned here. God does set value on those who respond to his word.
And although we've said that Daniel remained and that he probably could not have done very much because he was at a very advanced age, but we know that he prayed. He was there praying behind the scenes.
Yes.
Possibly also having contact with Cyrus, and who knows, maybe even direct contact with the Tirshatha and with Ezra. And Joshua.
Yeah.
There would seem to be two reasons, as far as I can see, why we have such the list of names here. On God's side, God delights to record all those who are faithful to him, especially in days of darkness and departure from the truth. But on the human side, those who are going back took great care to ensure that all those who were going back had a right to go back and to take up their responsibility. Twice in this chapter, we see priests who came back who were unable to show their genealogy. They couldn't prove they were priests. And I think it's, as I say, it's something similar with Solomon's servants. I think you read, Simon. The people took, I think, comes out in the next chapter when the opposition arrives and those who come and say, let us build as well. But they were able to say straight away, no, you have no right, because they were taking great care as to those that were going back. So I think that there seems to be these two reasons I would see why we have such a list of names here, God's side and man's side, and both are important, and I'm sure they are linked. We have to ensure that all those who are desiring to take a place are qualified for that place. But also the encouragement we take is that all those who stand for God in such days as we find ourselves in today, God delights to acknowledge.
There was a great variety among them, speaking of those who are covered in the first 35 verses, from verse 3 at any rate to verse 35. These were the children of various fathers amongst the Israelites. And I did look at the numbers that came back of them. And of the children of Senar in verse 35, it says there were 3,630. I think that's the largest group that came back from a particular family. Verse 24, I think this may relate to something that Gwyn had said earlier. Verse 24, we read children of Asmaveth, 40 and 2. A big difference. 3,630 and then 42. Now, of course, it's possible that these families were much bigger to start with, the family of Sena. That's why there were so many more than the family of Asmaveth. But I think it does show us that God takes account of all those who are faithful, regardless of whether they come back in strength in terms of numbers, or whether they come back in weakness, in the sense that there's only a very few of them who actually made the return to Jerusalem. And I think that's an encouragement to us, particularly in our own country, where there's so much weakness, not to take a haughty position that we're the only ones or anything like that, but simply to see that there God does sustain even those who are few in number. But I'm sure there are other differences between these groups that we can take account of too.
This first list seems to be divided into two. First, there are families from verse 3 down to 20. From 21 to the end, then, we have them as regards cities. And it's quite remarkable. The first city mentioned in verse 21 is Bethlehem. I think we said last time, the return to the land had in view the presentation of Christ to his people.
Yeah.
And Bethlehem would bring this before us. But in verse 23, then the third city, Anathoth, again, I think someone mentioned Jeremiah already. If we remember, Jeremiah, when in prison, was told to buy this piece of land, a field in Anathoth, where he was from, in view of the day when they would be restored to the land. It was an act of faith, demonstrating that although they were going to go into captivity, God was going to bring them back. And this day had now come. So again, there are perhaps other cities. We read down, we see history, Bethel and Ai, some of these cities. But it's quite remarkable that Bethlehem is the first. And I think that does support what we said last week about Messiah being presented to the nation. Anathoth is an interesting city to mention. And then the last city, with the greatest number, perhaps that also has this idea that God has a great end in view in this people. It might have been a small work, but the largest number being the last group, I think, presents this thought. God has large ideas, and I think we can be encouraged by that. We might live in a day of small things, but God is working toward a great end, and that should be a great encouragement for us.
There's an interesting guy in verse 13, Adonikim, he had 666.
Yes.
And when you read of the list that came with Ezra, now I know that was probably over 50 years later in chapter 8 and verse 13, we get, and of the last sons or the last ones of Adonikim, and we get the names of three of them, and with them was 70 males. We can only suggest that the rest of the family came back at a later period, and therefore there were some that had a desire to come back, but for various reasons couldn't. Perhaps they were too young, but they did come back in the end.
Yeah, and in the later parts of the list, not wanting to move on too quickly from the ones at the beginning, I think the ones at the beginning, both from the families and the cities, amounted, I wrote down somewhere, to about 22,000 of maybe 22,644 of the people that returned. I'm not sure that that's got any particular significance, but the people that returned from these families and these cities made up around about half of the people that returned to Jerusalem. But there were others who came back who are identified according to their tasks in the economy of Israel. And of course, we have the priests at verse 36 and the Levites at verse 40. The priests who were responsible for the functioning of the tabernacle and the temple, of course, later on, and will be responsible for its functioning under the rebuilding of the temple, following the rebuilding of the temple later on in this book. We might obviously think of them as those who had a particularly important responsibility, But they needed the assistance of the Levites, and the Levites were also those who could teach the people in their cities. Right at the beginning, Gwyn mentioned the fact that they were living in their cities, and it was the responsibility of the Levites to be with the people of Israel where they lived, in their tribes, where they lived. And they were responsible not only for assisting the priests, but also teaching the people the things of the Lord. We get that in Deuteronomy 33, I think, in respect of the tribe of Levi, in its Levitical service rather than its priestly service. But we also have in verse 41 singers. There were those who could give voice to the response of the people of Israel to God in worship, in praise. And also in verse 42, the children of the porters. We might have thought that these really didn't need to be mentioned, but God doesn't see it that way. Those who take responsibility practically in the service of God would be ones who did what might be described as more menial tasks, Levites, when the temple is actually built. They're needed for the service of the house of God in Jerusalem.
We noticed that there was only a few Levites, 74. Mm. When Ezra went out with his band, when they were all assembled, they found that there was no Levites, and they had to go and call for some. So there seemed to be a lack of Levites who wanted to go back. And normally you think there would be many more Levites than there were priests, because the priests were just one family.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have an inheritance in the same way as the other tribes did. Maybe they weren't so interested if they didn't have an inheritance. But the Lord was their inheritance. I don't know what we can learn from that.
Well, we do know, don't we, that there were those who wanted to be priests from among the other members of God's people. And I think in particular, I'm now really I'm not quite sure exactly if I'm going to say what's true, but I think there were those among the Levites who were involved in the rebellion of the sons of Korah. Maybe I'm better be careful what I say in case I'm saying something that's wrong. But I think it's possible the Levites could have preferred to have been priests. And it could also be the case you've mentioned, Brian, that they didn't have an inheritance of their own in terms of land among the God's earthly people. And they may, as a result of that, be less attracted to going back as Levites. But it may be also the tasks that they had as Levites, they weren't particularly valuing as much as they should have done. That is the things I've mentioned. Ministering to the spiritual needs of God's earthly people in terms of teaching them the law of God. And sometimes that kind of personal service, that kind of, you might even link it with shepherding amongst the people of God today, is something which we don't always go in for because it involves a lot of sacrifice, a lot of effort, a lot of personal involvement with people that takes up a lot of time. Even if the Levites weren't particularly guilty of that, I think it's still something that we might learn a lesson from.
Because there are only 74 Levites, you might think, well, there's over 4,000 priests, that's fine. But when we look at the 24 orders of priests that David set up for the temple, we only have four mentioned here. Of 20 of them, not a man returned. So even though there were 4,000 priests, that still was only a fraction of all that ought to have been there. And we were encouraged at the start to look at this chapter now to start to see the application to ourselves in local assemblies. We're all priests. Are we all exercising the priesthood we ought to? We're all Levites. We don't only have service Godward, we have service manward. We assist one another. When we think of Levites, you might think more of them, the gifts that God has given, but we're all responsible to edify one another. And perhaps this is the least number, this might be the least appreciated service or least conducted service among us today. We're all Levites, but are we exercising our Levitical service to one another, to help one another, encourage one another, build one another up? These 74 people, they must have had a lot of work to do. They were certainly overworked. Mm. They had a tremendous amount. They had 4,000 priests, yeah. for example, to support. They had the people to teach. This is really, and probably of all these areas, this is the one I would certainly focus on. How are we exercising our Levitical service toward one another? Mm. Are we seeking to encourage one another as to our service Godward? They were to help the priests to perform their service. Do we help one another? Do we, as they did, teach one another then? Pass on what God has taught us? This is perhaps the greatest lack in this remnant were Levites. And I think it's true. It's the greatest lack among us today. A lack of those who are performing such service among their brethren, among one another. Are we exercised about the gifts that God has given us to just help and encourage one another? This was a real weakness, I think, for this returning remnant. And it's a weakness for us. We can't say there are not enough Levites today, because we're all Levites. You know, we're looking at Israel in the flesh. They were either a priest, they were a Levite, they were a singer, a doorkeeper, they were one of the tribes, the warriors. They were only one thing. But when it comes to the New Testament, we're all of these things. We're all priests. We're all Levites. We're all responsible as singers and doorkeepers and servants. But this is perhaps the least exercised part of our the gifts that we have, and we really need to be exercised about this matter.
Yeah, I think that's very good. Yeah, just to refer back to what I said about the Levite and the rebellion of Korah. Korah was of the family of Kohath, who was a Levite. So in that rebellion, which was against God's ordering of his people, which, as you said, Andrew, is different from the ordering today of having a separate family of priests, a separate tribe of Levites, and so on. Nonetheless, God equips, in fact, the Lord Jesus equips his people to serve him in these different characters today by gifting them accordingly. And we have to ask ourselves the question, are we willing to do the particular thing that the Lord Jesus has given us to do? Or do we want to do what somebody else is doing? Or do we desire to do their service rather than the service the Lord has given us? And that was the case with Korah. He was a Levite. He was of the family of Kohath. And yet they were envious of Moses and Aaron. They wanted to have the responsibilities they had. We can read about it in Numbers 16.
You mentioned, I think, Andrew, that there were 11 categories in chapter 2, one short of 12. Would you like just to enumerate them for us? Because down through the verses.
I had the leaders in verse 2, the general people, verse 3, then down to 35. And thirdly, the priests, verse 36 to 39. The Levites in verse 40, the singers, verse 41. Sixthly, the doorkeepers in verse 42. The Nethinim, verse 43. Solomon's servants, verse 55. Come to them later. Then we have the priests again in verse 60. We're a different group that God brings before us, because although the priests have been covered already, the Spirit brings before us this group of priests that couldn't prove their genealogy, verse 61. Then 10th, we have the servants in verse 65, and the animals in verse 66. So they're not people, but 11 different groups that God would focus our attention on. I hope that helps.
Thanks. Mm. And as you said, these were categories within Israel, but today they're fulfilled in the collectivity of believers, as you've been saying. We're all priests. We're all Levites. We're all singers. There are no special choirs, and all porters, Nethinim, Solomon's servants, and so on. And I think the word of exhortation is very apposite, you know, as to whether we answer to our responsibilities
in regard to these classifications, or these things which are true in one and all of us, but which, as Gwyn has indicated in chapter two, have to be worked out in localities.
We'd have to understand we're all of these things in a spiritual sense. When we come to the singers, for example, if we take it literally, we might have what are referred to in many places as worship leaders. They were the other singers. They were to lead, if you like, the worship in the temple. But we don't take these things literally. It's one of these modern things to have worship leaders. But Scripture doesn't recognize any such thing, at least in the New Testament. We're all singers. We're all to be occupied with this worship, celebrating the victory of Christ. We're all doorkeepers when we come to verse 42, or porters. We're all responsible to ensure we guard against anything unholy or unclean or defiling entering in among the people of God. This is something which you cannot delegate to others. Every one of us individually, every local assembly has to be worked out along these lines, and collectively, all of these things have to be done on all of these levels. But it's the responsibility of everyone to be these things. There might be some that are specially gifted for these things, but we cannot delegate these things to anyone else. We all have to be exercised about service Godward, service manward, or maintaining these things. When we come to the Epistle of Jude, for example, he writes to all the saints, and all have to be exercised to guard this faith that was once and for all delivered. There was no matter when it comes to John writing to the elect sister. She was to be exercised along these lines of maintaining holiness. So there's a responsibility for every one of us. We have to apply all of these things to ourselves. We can't just say, well, yes, that's that person, this is this person. No, I must be exercised along all of these lines. Otherwise, yeah, I'm not answering to this section.
Yeah. I suppose we have to see things from the point of view of the general responsibility that all saints have. I mean, we were looking at Yarnfield Park in the conference at the fact that we're a holy and a royal priesthood. There should be a response to God, and there should be a testimony to the world, in this world, to God as well. You could say one is vertical and one is horizontal, but we're all responsible for it. But there are particular matters which are given to some to exercise today in the church. It would be to say, wouldn't it? There are the gifts that are mentioned in the epistles. For instance, there are teachers, there are pastors, and there are evangelists still today. A particular responsibility which lies upon those who've been gifted to carry out, to exercise their gifts. Wouldn't that be right to say?
I think so. Certainly, we see it later on. There were those that were given the job of guarding the doors.
Yes, yeah.
But I think when we come to there, we're looking at these things in the local setting, and I think we all have to be exercised along these lines. Yes, there are some that are have a particular gift along a certain line, but yeah, that doesn't excuse me from also being exercised about it.
No, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
I noticed that in this list that we have, we only have three sisters mentioned. Do you think they were included in the previous list? Or do we have just the men as the responsible part of the family? Certainly when we talk about we're all priests, that includes the sisters.
Yes.
And we're all Levites, that includes the sisters. But there's a sphere in which they can work, and there's a sphere in which they cannot work. And we it's worth thinking about.
So which ones were the sisters, Rusty?
61.
I can't hear you.
And 50, 65, we get the maids and the women.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that we get the Nethinim still here. Obviously, they came in by deceit initially, but clearly there were those that valued the position that they were given and continue to see themselves as part of the people of God. because we're all a bit like Nethinims. We only come in by grace. We don't deserve anything. But it also reminds the people of Israel that there were those that were not born of Abraham's seed, but they still had a place there. And those that boasted themselves of being children of Abraham, God acknowledges there was a place for others. And they had these menial tasks of hewers of wood and drawers of water. And there is need for those who are willing to do the low tasks that the people of God need.
You would see the Nethinim and Brian as the descendants of the Gibeonites that we learn of in Book of Joshua. Is that where you would think these would come from?
Yes.
I think the word is thought to mean devoted ones. So these were ones that weren't of the tribe of Israel, but seem to have been, well, we do know in the case of the Gibeonites, maybe it goes beyond the Gibeonites, but we do see in the case of the Gibeonites, they were drawers of water, hewers of wood, drawers of water. But they seem to have been appointed. I'm not sure if they were appointed, but they seem to have been given a responsibility to support the Levite. And in that sense, it seems remarkable that there were many, well, just looking at the list, although the numbers aren't given in this list from verse 43 down to verse 58, already it says all the Nethinims and the children of Solomon's servants. It says of the total, there were 392, which was certainly more than the Levites. So it does seem to me that these ones who weren't really of Israel, genetically, if I can put it that way, there were more of those who showed devotion to the needs of the service of God than there were of the Levites, who most certainly were of the tribe of Israel. And I think that's got its own lesson to teach us. Those who come in from alien and backgrounds often show more devotion than those who've been brought up amongst God's people and in succeeding generations tend to show less devotion. I'm only generalizing, of course. There are exceptions in both cases, but it does seem to me remarkable that you've got this large list, that in the large part of the list is made up of Nethinims, and the total, if I've got it right, in verse 58, is 392. And they were the helpers of the Levites, I think, in the time of David and Solomon.
Come back to what we said at the start then, the service of the Nethinim, if we apply this to the local assembly, would apply to deacon service. Those that were doing, not we'd want to say menial, because that seems to downplay it, but those that were so serving tables, like they said, isn't it? They took care of the distribution of food and money to the widows, looking after money, preparing the rooms, this kind of service, which God values. I think we see it because the list of, as you said, Simon, the list of families of the Nethinim is far longer than the list when we look at the priests or any of the other ones, apart from the general people. It's a long list. God details them all. God values those services that perhaps are undervalued by us.
Yes, yeah. And you know, interspersed in the history of Israel, there are particular individuals who stand out in terms of their devotion, who weren't of God's earthly people, but had associated themselves with God's earthly people. I mean, Uriah the Hittite is an outstanding example. And there was another man who was prepared to go into exile with David during Absalom's rebellion. I can't remember. He was a Gittite, I think. But these were people that stood out as faithful and devoted to God. Perhaps you could say, well, they had reason to think that way because they weren't from among God's chosen people, but certainly they seem to have valued loyal service to God and to his king more than some others.
Perhaps it teaches us that service that we do has to be based upon the understanding the knowledge of the grace that has been shown to us. Because these servants, if we take them back to the Gibeonites, they realized that they deserved judgment. God was going to judge them. And they came and they acted deceitfully. But then afterwards, when it was all came to light, they explained it and grace was shown them. They weren't destroyed. And although they had this menial work, certainly the Nethinim, the fact that they would go back to the land here shows that they appreciated God's grace. And this has to be a part of our service, the motive behind it. We appreciate the grace that God has shown to us, the love that has been shown. And I think that's why we have God delights to list these people one after the other. I think about 35 all told. God lists them because they were ones who didn't deserve that land. Well, none of them deserved the land. They deserved judgment, but God spared them. God showed them grace, and God gives more length, or more verses to these Nethinim than any other group, save the general group of the people that returned by your families and cities.
Yeah.
And we can perhaps say the same thing about Solomon's servants in verse 55. Again, a verse that often is referred to as 1 Kings 9, 20 and 21. In Solomon's reign in the early days, there was a remnant spared of some of the nations round about, and they were put to service by Solomon. And we assume that they were probably descendants of these or similar groups, again, that were spared judgment. They were brought in, and they have a very similar background, therefore, to the Nethinim. And so in verse 58, they put together. They might have had different origins. Perhaps some that were of Solomon's servants might have been from surrounding nations, the Nethinim from Canaanites in the land. But they had a very similar background. And so they are listed together, even though they are two distinct groups here.
Well, we often learn from looking more deeply at the scriptures that what we think are parts of God's word which haven't got a great deal of relevance to us, such as the genealogies and lists of various names, often when we are prepared to mine them, to find out more about them, we find that they contain a lot of practical instruction for us that we would have missed out on if we hadn't paid attention to them. So I think this study this evening really does prove the value that we can get from just looking at this list in Ezra 2. And we haven't been able to get into Ezra 3 or the latter verses of chapter 2. So I think it's been worthwhile to consider these names. But we have got to the end of our study, so we should perhaps commit one another to the Lord and pray that he will help us to learn still more from what we're considering this evening.